Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 1, season premiere. What'd you think?
It was a good return.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it didn't blow your doors off, but, you know, they got to get warmed up.
If I'm being honest, I was expecting a little door blowing.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Why do you say that? Because of the way it went out last season? Like, I'm going to be Saul now?
Well, I don't know. I guess... My temptation, if I was a creator, when I'm coming back from a long hiatus where people were like really high on the show, is to do something to kind of rock the boat, raise the stakes. But when I was reading a lot of behind-the-scenes interviews with Gould and Gilligan, it seems like that they're more intent on, whoa, walking back, like, man, we're already in Saul country.
Yeah.
And we need to get back into Jimmyville. We don't want an electric slide on into Slippin' Jimmy.
Right.
Electric slip. We don't want to sleaze on into Saul. We want to stay with Jimmy because we like him so much. Mm-hmm. So I felt like a lot of this episode was walking back the moral decision that he made at the end of last season.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like it, especially right off the bat when they go in with this kind of change up of what you thought you saw previously, that he didn't even take this meeting and he just blew off Kim and everything.
Yep.
Instead, we get kind of a new perspective on that.
Taking the job was all about Kim.
Yeah. I think that becomes clear, especially toward the end of this episode, that's kind of how he feels about it, and he'd rather not do it.
I thought it was pretty clear in the beginning of the episode because he said, you know, when she said this has nothing to do with the other thing, being them getting together, he said thanks but no thanks and fucked off to the Hotel de la Grift, or checking in as Victor grifting. With a K.
Oh, man. Good stuff. I don't know how much we want to talk about it before we get into the recap, but I found myself really enjoying the scenes that I was supposed to enjoy, like the comedy and stuff like that. And kind of, you know, I'm going to be patient. I know they have greatness up their sleeve. They can do it again. I'll just let them do it in their own time.
Yeah, I expected to come around, and I'm not disappointed. Like I said, I feel like they're doing a lot to set up some things down the road.
Yeah,
that I'm kind of interested in seeing how it goes and how it bites Jimmy in the ass. But we'll get to that. I do want to mention the episode is directed to Todd Sofer, who was a Teamster who worked on both Saul and Breaking Bad. He actually is in a few scenes. Last year he was in a kind of background cameo. He was large man in coveralls squeezing into the bathroom with Saul when he's meeting with the Kettlemans.
Okay.
And then in the final season of Breaking Bad, he was in the junkyard helping Jesse and Walt hook up their magnet.
All right.
Get their magnet set up all taken care of. So,
test that out. Sure.
Yeah, I don't know much about him other than that. And I don't, you know, a Teamster implies he was some sort of laborer, some behind the scenes guy. But I guess he was well liked and got his way on camera a couple times.
All right,
two more times than I ever did.
Sounds good. Let's get into the recap real quick. Gene closes the Cinnabon for the night, and he goes to take out the trash. But when he does, the door shuts behind him, locking him in. And he could open another door and trigger an alarm and call the cops, but he'd have to deal with the cops, and you know, Gene's kind of in hiding. So instead, he sits there for 2.5 hours while he waits for the janitor to show up.
I've had that experience outside of our apartment complex.
Really?
I know your door doesn't function properly.
Right, so mine just opens.
My outer door shuts, and you can't get back in, and sometimes during the day, there's no one home. I've waited for 45, 50 minutes.
Wait, you can go to the... You can go to the office and say, hey, I can't get in my building.
So I could walk up to the office, say, hey, I forgot my fucking... And then wait for them to wrap up whatever they're doing. I mean, it's always
You should have gone to the pool, gotten a drink, floated around.
If an angel came down and said, Aaron, it'll be 55 minutes until the neighbor comes, I would do that. But when you're sitting there and I got a cell phone and it's kind of a nice day, it's like, I can just hang out on the bumper of my car until...
Okay,
walks in.
I think I'm letting the current weather color my opinion on
it. Yeah, yeah.
If I were sitting out there in 20-degree weather.
It's pouring rain, something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's pouring rain, I'm kind of screwed anyway.
Yeah.
But I thought the open to this was Kafka as fuck.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
That you know, he's and then I think the grayness, kind of the black and white nature of it, fed into that. But you've got this easy way out, but there's this warning about the police showing, and then there's actually a second page of these instructions that's apparently missing. Did you get that? It says, you know, the police will be notified if you must exit the, and then it cuts off and there's space for another page of instructions.
See, I didn't notice that. So I didn't read the whole thing.
There's probably an easy way out of this situation.
Like a phone somewhere that he could call.
Yeah.
And they could remotely unlock it or.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All
but
right.
Because they have to print on a certain enormous font, he's sitting there. And of course, you know, that's the thing. When I first watched, I'm like, well, he's in witness protection. He can. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, he's not. He's in bad guy protection.
Yeah, he's on the run, man.
Like mint jelly, he's on the lamb. And it's like that was a really an interesting predicament, and just his rage of being stuck in this. You know, he's doing this to avoid jail.
Yeah,
but it's easy to see his whole post Saul existence as a form of confinement,
right?
Unpleasant
right.
confinement.
And they go. So I listened to the Breaking Bad Insider or. Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, Insider Cast, and they talked, in fair detail about the stuff they were doing in the show, and that was one of the things. Like, this room is kind of a taste of a cell for him.
Sure.
And, like, it's supposed to reflect how he is kind of living a certain trapped life.
Yeah.
Where he can't be the man who he was, and then you zoom in on that, Saul Goodman was here, SG was here. And you really get the impression that he is no longer that person, and he would like to be that person,
yeah.
but he can't be, and that's a sort of cell-like experience, jail-like experience, too.
Did they mention that being a nod to Shawshank?
No, they didn't.
Okay. Because, like, the old guy, when he finally gets institutionalized, he finally gets out, and he hangs himself, but before he does, he carves on the beam that he ends up hanging himself, whatever his name was here. So I thought maybe, because, you know, Vince Gilligan loves to do that shit.
Right.
He had a pulp... roundabout Pulp Fiction reference.
Is it even roundabout? No, not, I think it's subvert.
It's a twisted because they take the dialogue and it was applied to Kane from Kung Fu and she just says like Jules from Pulp Fiction.
Right,
so it's like a self-referential reference. That's a Villigan favorite.
Yeah, they didn't. So, I don't know. The Breaking Bad Insider cast this week was weird because they have so many people on that cast that it's hard to get everybody.
Well, that was
in.
Always the problem with some of the Breaking Bad ones, too.
Yeah.
It's more of like a party that you can kind of overhear some of the conversations.
And that's fun. There were some real zinger jokes in there. And they had Odenkirk on, and he is freaking hilarious most of the time.
Yeah.
But they didn't talk too much about the show. They talked more about just like. You know, what it's like to be acting in these things and be the leading man and all this stuff, which is interesting, just not show specific.
Yeah.
So I feel like there was less information in there that I would have liked this week as compared to others. But there were some bits to glean, and I'll bring them up as we go.
I'm really curious about the hummingbird. In fact, I started up the Insider cast. I ran out of time. I didn't get that far. But I have a big question about the brief hummingbird cameo.
Okay.
I imagine
a lot of people might have missed it. It was just so quick.
It was quick. The first watch, I thought it was a bug, like some kind. And then I went, did they CG that in? Because, man, it's so framed up perfect. But
Yeah. We'll talk about it. Are they going to continue to show Gene's existence in the future, getting more and more miserable? Because that's what I really hope.
I said on the preview cast that I hope they do. Some kind of either bookending, or that's how they traditionally kick off the season, to show the contrast between Jimmy's life now and the choices he makes, and then his post-Saul existence as Gene.
Yeah.
I think that's, and I think if they continue to do things that are creative and appropriate to the Breaking Bad universe, then I am fully on board with that.
And that's sort of like... I don't know. It's like the writers are sort of mean-spirited with him, but in this benign sort of way. Like, it's not like there are tragedies happening to him. It's just like one small thing compounding over and over. Like,
no.
He's got this boring-ass existence.
That's why I said it's so Kafka, because it's...
I love it.
Any free man would just rock out the door. Probably wouldn't even wait for the cops to show up, because like, I haven't done anything wrong. But he's in this very particular predicament.
Yep.
I mean, it'd almost be better if he was the register girl or guy wearing the Buns or Fun shirt, because he could have walked out there without fucking with the trash. But since he's the manager of the store, there's a lot of layers to the Gene existence that I like.
And they're all pretty
it's
bad.
It's all twisted up like a Cinnabon layered with a bunch of icing on it. It's nice.
So Jimmy, in current day, I guess, meets with the law
living
firm.
Color.
Yeah, we're back in color. He meets with the law firm who wants to hire him, this Davis and Maine place.
Which, by the way, I fucked up in a preview cast. I said this was a San Jose
I think we
law
both
firm.
Fucked up. I think
it's Santa Fe.
Right, which is also in New Mexico.
Right.
And is not really that far away.
It's
from... I mean, it's, you know, compared to San Jose,
right,
which is quite a bit farther away.
Right. I'm looking it up right now. It is I guess it's only an hour away.
Yeah, not so far that it would preclude a relationship with Kim.
Indeed.
So
indeed.
That's good. He takes her aside and Kim aside and asks her if taking this job has anything to do with whether or not they'll be together. She says no, and he turns down the job on the spot. He like gets a smile and he's like, okay, done.
That was an interesting reaction. Why do you think he did it?
Why did he in this moment take her aside and ask? Or
let's back up a bit. What did she mean by the one has nothing to do with the other? Because I don't know that that's literally true.
Yeah, I'm not certain, especially after seeing this episode, if that would be true.
I interpret it as, if you take this job, I'm not saying I'm going to date you, and I'm not saying I'm not.
Yeah.
But it's likely that if he doesn't take the job, and then, I mean, I don't know if he still tries to be the little guy serving the people lawyer. But if he goes and in a slip and Jimmy, then she's out. Whereas I don't know
mostly
how Jimmy interpreted it.
Okay. Yeah, but I think Jimmy.
And also, wouldn't it be gross if she said, absolutely, you take this job and we're in? Like, that's not.
Or you don't and we're out? Like,
yeah.
That's pretty controlling.
It's not just controlling. It says something about her as how she sees status and money and a lot of things I don't think would appeal to Jimmy.
Yeah, so that's the thing about their relationship that I think they're doing a pretty good job portraying. Like, it doesn't seem like their relationship is predicated on any kind of circumstances or anything like that. It's literally, it's a genuine connection between two people, right?
It
doesn't have to do with their jobs. It doesn't have to do with what Jimmy's going to do for money, anything like that.
Yeah.
She's concerned. She doesn't understand what he's doing and why he would be doing it. But I don't believe that she's going to say, fuck you, man, don't ever talk to me again just because of that.
Did you see Talking Saul?
I didn't, no.
I have not watched, I don't think, a full episode of Talking Anything.
Okay. Did you watch this one?
Yeah, because I didn't watch the whole thing because it's an hour long. That's not enough material for a full hour. But one thing, it had Rhea Seehorn, who plays Kim, and Bob Odenkirk on there, and they're sitting next to each other on the couch. It was Gould, Gilligan, Odenkirk, and then Rhea.
Jeez, that's a lot of people.
And they were like pretty close. I feel like that they have a lot of just genuine interpersonal chemistry that translate. Like, I think they enjoy hanging out. They mentioned like at one point in filming this season of Saul that Bob lost his voice for like 2 weekends, and they had to kind of film around that, and he couldn't talk, and she volunteered to kind of hang out with him at the hotel, and just and they were passing notes back, and because he couldn't like talk, he had to save everything for he wasn't trying to stress it.
Sure
And they were telling it like as a super, it was kind of a lame story, but the way they're telling it was funny just because you could see that they just like hanging out with each other,
right?
And I wonder, you know, I've heard again and again that Vince, and I'm assuming Gould is just like him, they look for little beats in the people, the actors, to incorporate, you know, to make it, you know, a little bit more color, a little more texture. And I wonder how much of this relationship is being shaped by how well those two get along.
I think it's got to help, right?
Can't hurt.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're supposed to be mortal enemies on screen and you can't do it because you like the other person.
I mean, that sometimes works a lot. Like, you know, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford hated each other in Empire. And, like, sometimes that can generate sparks and heat. But I don't know.
Are we seeing that in the X-Files right now? Is that what we're...
I don't know what we're seeing in the X-Files.
Okay. Anyway, so we get a repeat of some of the same scenes that we saw last season, where Jimmy's leaving the parking lot and he stops and talks with Mike. about this money and how he's never going to be stopped by doing the right thing again.
Certainly never going to be stopped by signs that say cucumber waters for customers only.
Absolutely not. He goes back to the nail salon. The owner tells him you can't have cucumber water. He says, you know what? He turns on the spout, sticks his mouth under it, and drinks it down defiantly.
I thought that's a weird thing to do because...
yeah.
The loophole is not the cups. She didn't say cups are for customers. She said the water's for customers.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do that, just grab a cup and look her right in the eye as you drink it, I guess.
Yeah.
It was funny.
Yeah, sure.
Especially as soon as he like tucked his tie behind his... It's like you knew something crazy was going to happen.
Yeah, and I like the reaction of all the people in there, both the employees and the customers.
Yep.
I can't believe what they're seeing. They're laughing.
Is he done? Like, are we done with the nail salon as far as him being in an office?
I think so. He pulls down his nameplate, his makeshift paper sign.
And he checks in the Grift Hotel.
Uh-huh.
And now he's got an office with Coco Bolo.
Right.
I feel like the nail salon obviously is going to come back around because we see it in Breaking Bad.
So he was, it's my impression that he was living in his office after the Chuck thing.
When he couldn't stay with his brother, he had that fold out terrible thing that he was sleeping on, sure.
Right. So he's got to find a place in Santa Fe, I guess. Which I assume
in his office.
He'll do immediately.
The office is badass, man.
Just roll
out. He's got that little
blanket.
Fireplace in the corner, you know? Mm-hmm. Get a bearskin rug.
All
have
right.
Kim over for, I don't know.
So then we go over to Price and Mike, and Price rolls up to the meeting in this gaudy new H2 Hummer. Mike refuses to get in it. He says, no, we'll take my car. And instead, Price fires Mike, saying, you know what? I'm throwing money in the garbage, right in the trash.
No, you're
not.
No, you're not. You're throwing Mickey Mantles into the garbage.
Yeah, and all your
crease
stash.
And your Ty Cobb.
So he fires Mike. He says, fuck it. I don't need backup. Nacho doesn't need backup. I don't need backup.
Sure. And Mike's like, whatever.
And then we go over to the meet, and Price is so proud of his new car that he lets Nacho check it out and get inside.
It has a tri-zone climate. I mean,
right.
you got to be proud of that.
You can have one girl in a parka, one girl in a bikini.
Sure.
They'll both be comfortable.
Sure.
Which is a myth, by the way. Those zoned climate controls.
Yeah, I would think it's
don't
not
work
that extreme,
that way.
Yeah.
Anyway, so while he's distracted, counting his money, Nacho gets Price's real name, which is Daniel Wall something. I don't know, Wall Holt, Wall Waldorf,
mm-hmm.
From his registration in his glove box and his address and everything. So let's talk about this hummingbird.
Yes.
This hummingbird is real.
This hummingbird is real.
Somehow, while they were filming on this crane shot with this unmanned camera, this hummingbird flies through the frame. Nobody notices.
Sure. But the thing is, it's like dead fucking, it like hits its mark.
It stopped. It totally hits its
that's
mark.
That's why I thought it was CG because, wow.
I thought so too. And I was like, what did I just see? The hummingbird flew through the screen, but why? Why would they add that? Well, they didn't add it. It flew through. And in ending, Kelly was rolling through the footage, noticed it, and was like, this is too good. We've got to use this.
Sure.
It's just crazy.
It was a cool stat. And the odds of that shot happening when it wasn't going to be spoiled by, like, the, you know, guys with clipboards and, you know, moving shit around. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm glad because if it was intentional, I'm like, what does it mean?
Yeah.
Or is it just an interesting little flourish? Now I'm glad it's just kind of like one of those serendipitous moments they captured.
It's funny, too, because when Kelly went to Vince and was like, look, we've got this footage. I really want to use it. And he was like, that's great, but what does it mean? Which is the exact same thing the audience is asking.
But, you know, I wonder if she cropped it a bit because I'm telling you, that hummingbird hit its mark dead center.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's like National Geographic footage.
Sure, sure.
So Jimmy's floating in the pool. Do you want to talk about anything about Nacho?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So Price or Danny or whatever we're calling him, I get the Hummer. The Hummer's, I mean, you take a Hummer and then you make it as stupid looking as possible. But when he gets out of those Ronald McDonald shoes,
oh my god! And the watch, like he's coordinated.
I don't. Is he just slowly, one piece at a time, going to Ronald McDonald? Like, he bought the Hummer, the watch, and his shoes, and he ran out of money. Next week is going to be the wig and the nose, and then finally the jumpsuit. Was the plan.
That was the plan, yeah. Like,
I don't get it. I guess they're trying to make him out to be a joke. I think they went a bit too far.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the shoes and the watch.
I can understand why you'd say that, sure. I think the Hummer itself is more gaudy than the shoes.
I thought it'd been funnier if he had, like, a Hummer hat and a Hummer jacket.
Okay. You know,
like, he's the guy that buys like new,
the BMW stuff.
Or the Harleys. Bought a new Harley. Now he's got the fucking 1% or leathers going. Like, I felt like that would have been more, but this is just bizarre. Well, maybe that's...
Are those Hummer shoes? Are we sure they're not?
I'm pretty fucking sure they're not Hummer shoes.
Okay.
They got the... Oh, that's what it means, the hummingbird.
Oh, you figured it out.
Yeah, the Hummer imagery. That's how... What attention to detail
mm-hmm.
Villigan has. And that's the downfall of the price. Okay, I think I've said my piece on that.
Okay. What do you think Nacho is thinking about Price?
I think Nacho's thinking this guy's
like
an idiot.
This is interesting.
He's got a huge wad of cash. I know for a fact he's got a huge wad of cash. He's not going to just drop off in the bank. He might be doing deals with other people. He might have some other shit at his house.
I want to say that this might be the last deal he would ever do with Price because, A, he's stolen from him, and I think Price knows that.
You think so? Man, I want
to
wait
until
we get
to
the scene.
Maybe he's too dumb to know, but
yeah.
I think Nacho is smart enough to know that this guy, like Mike knows, is a loose cannon, is a fool, is going to get everybody caught because he's not cautious enough.
Hmm.
He doesn't have that restraint that Mike does, that Nacho does.
Do you think that...
And Nacho's dealing with fucking Tuco already, so...
So that's a good point. You think that he might have set up Price... I mean, I want to...
What do you mean?
When the cops show up, I just have a lot to talk about. So,
all right.
Because you've got me thinking now that maybe... I was thinking Nacho saw an easy mark. But now you're thinking that, like, yes, he did, but also this is bad
he
for
wanted
me
out of this.
Because if
yeah.
this guy gets caught by the cops, it's almost inevitable when you start flashing around that money
yeah.
and you're an idiot about it. Although he is a programmer.
Yeah, but... Sure, programmers make a fair bit of money. And it's not unreasonable to afford a Hummer.
And it looks like he's a very single man, which
yeah.
you know usually ties up the rest of a young man's income.
But I just can't, like, this guy with this car.
Yeah.
Does not make a lot of sense.
No.
I mean, unless he goes all out, and well, I mean his fucking house too. Oh my god, it's a nightmare. This guy top to bottom.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If I'm Nacho, I'm thinking I'm done with this deal. This
yeah.
is a bum deal.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you can, there's a certain extent that you can, I don't know, I don't want to nerd shame anybody because God knows I've got my freak flag flies from time to time, but at some point you got to decide how much of that do you want to be part of your life and how much of it do you want to do.
I mean, I'd be fine if he had like a life-size stand-up of Darth Vader or something in his house and was like turning his house into a shrine to Star Wars. That's fine. It just doesn't seem to mesh the nerd with the gaudy ass Hummer.
Hmm.
Like, those two lifestyles are very different in my mind. But
you see, I think that's the thing. Like, you're not looking at this from he's a baseball nerd. He might not like science fiction. What does a baseball nerd look like? I submit a baseball nerd might look like Danny.
Really?
See, your nerd scale has no way of calibrating, like, if this all goes together.
You're right. Okay. I'll have to keep that in mind going forward.
Yeah, gotta put that in your calculations.
So Jimmy's floating in the pool, and his phone rings, and he tells the caller that he's no longer a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I am Jimmy, but not a lawyer. Kim shows up. She demands to know why he turned down the job, and Jimmy offers to explain if she gets in the pool. Instead, she's like, no, but I'll be in the bar if you want to talk. I'm not sure how she knew where to find him here. We don't ever see a phone call, but whatever. You can assume there's a phone call there.
Yeah.
And then we go to the bar.
Well, the other thing is I want to point out this overhead shot of Jimmy slowly floating into view. It's a great looking shot. And they take their time with it, too.
Just let it linger.
Yeah. If you're going to take the time to do that kind of shot, you got to give it some time to breathe so people can appreciate it. And kind of like...
And take in the ridiculous scenario, too. He's floating in a pool
right.
with a bowl of chips, a drink, and his cell phone floating in a plastic bag.
Which
next to
does
him.
That work?
I imagine it might.
Huh.
It might. Now, with the smartphone, maybe not, because it doesn't have buttons to answer calls and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
but
yeah. But with the flip
with
phone.
With his flip phone.
So I got a waterproof box last year for kayaking, and you can put a phone in that, seal it up, and you can play music through it. And it sounds...
That's cool.
It sounds different, but it doesn't sound terrible. I assume it's kind of like the same principle that, like, you know, you throw a cell phone into a cup and it makes it louder.
Yeah, yeah.
But I imagine you could hear things through it, but yeah, mm. And I forgot, physical buttons.
Yeah, he can press buttons and flip switches. He loves to do that.
Yep.
Anyway, they go to the bar. Jimmy's ogling this $50 shot of tequila, which we'll talk about later. And he explains to Kim that being a lawyer is who Chuck wanted him to be, and he doesn't want that. Instead, he's going to be open to the universe, which Kim just says she doesn't get it.
Well, the other thing is he's not being honest, because he's not telling her about his feelings for her and how that's impacting, and he's also refusing to talk about Cicero and the pinky.
Yeah, ring. Yeah, and this thing with Markov did have an effect on him, undoubtedly. Hell yeah. I mean, he's wearing that ring. Like, it changed him, seeing this man die, his friend.
And there's all kinds of ways it changed him, but yeah, and I feel like that's something that we're supposed to note, that, you know, if she's the, she's the love of his life, but she's his main squeeze or the one he's gotten as target, and he's refusing to be open and honest about a lot of different things, that's usually, that's a theme well explored in Breaking Bad, right?
Absolutely.
That's kind of the death knell for a relationship.
Sure.
So while it's nice to see them together and they're very cute together, I got to wonder long term where this is going if he can't figure out a way to communicate effectively with her.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder how much of Slip and Jimmy Kim is familiar with. Like, clearly she enjoys going on this caper with him here in a minute.
And she knows enough that, like, when he's checking this hotel and he starts ordering stuff and putting on his room, she knows that he's doing some kind of scam.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they don't spell it out, but, like, he's like checked in under an assumed name with probably a fake ID and...
Right, Mr. Cuttlefish or whatever his name was, I forget.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting because I think they might be setting him up to have sort of a confession about that, right? Like, let her in on who he was before he came to New Mexico and met her.
I feel like
kind of how that's influenced him, and then going back and seeing Marco, unhappy with his, what was it, a fire hose stand business or whatever.
Yeah. I feel like she knows, I guess that would explain why he's reluctant to talk about Cicero, but I guess I assume that she knew a lot more about that than it sounds like you suspect.
Yeah, I don't know. I get the impression that this is the first time, because she's very confused by what he's doing here, right? She doesn't get what he's showing her until like halfway through the con.
You didn't think so? I thought she knew. She was just afraid. She's like, oh man, do I want to get involved? Because you're committing fraud as a lawyer.
Yeah,
that's got to be a scary thing.
Right. She has a career to think about.
Yeah.
Is it worth a few moments of fun?
Or, like, you know, and that's the other thing. It's like, you know, whenever I see con men work, I'm like, God damn, that's got to be terrifying.
Right.
Any time this worm could turn and you're in big time trouble.
They show you the time when it works in this episode. But what about the 10 times it doesn't?
I mean, you're in for, like, legal trouble. You're in for an ass kicking. Who knows what you're in for? You got to watch your back. And there was a lot of stress in this episode for me, because when they complete the con and walk away from the bar, I'm like, oh man, is Ken going to come flying out here? Like, hey, you ass. And then I realize, well, Ken's place in the Breaking Bad universe is to let the...
Yep.
You know, the goofy leading man get his goat with no retribution.
Have some righteous justice.
Sure.
You know?
He's portrayed as a chode who can afford the loss. And so
it's harm.
A guilt-free grifting here.
So let's talk about this. We go to the bar. We are already at the bar. He sees this douchebag over... at the bar talking about stocks, decides he's going to show Kim exactly what he's talking about, and he concocts a story about a dead uncle and an inheritance and cons the guy into buying them a bunch of $50 shots, And Kim has a fantastic time. So fantastic, in fact, that she kisses
him
by the pool.
She spins the South African thing, which kind of makes, you know, like I think of white people from South Africa, and I think you've probably got a lot of money. You're probably a little odd. And
she covers for the not having an accent by saying, well, I've never been to South Africa, implying she's generational. Like,
yeah,
a lot of good stuff there.
Essentially, if I hear that you're a white person from South Africa, I think you're, oh shit, what's the actress that they mention here?
Theron.
Charlize Theron. That's the only white person I know from South Africa. So I assume that you're just,
I used to work with a guy from South Africa.
Did you really?
Yeah, he had a weird accent.
He had
a South African accent.
Uh-huh.
It was interesting. But yeah, so we know if for people who maybe haven't seen Breaking Bad or didn't know about this, that this guy is Ken Wynn's from Breaking Bad, and somewhere along the way,
we call him Ken Wynn's because that was his BMW license plate.
Yeah, he had his license plate, and somewhere along the way, I forget what season, like 2 or 3,
season one.
Season one?
Episode 4.
Walt? No.
Cancer Man, yeah.
No fucking way.
Yeah.
That's way too early for Walt to do what he does.
What does he do, really?
I won't say it in case you haven't seen Breaking Bad, but the people who have know what I'm talking about, and it's glorious. And so when he comes back up here, and I clearly see what's going to happen, I lost it. I loved it.
Sure.
This fool, this fucking douchebag.
And the fact that it's got the Zafiro Aneo reference.
Right. Which
is still the most popular page Bald Move has ever created.
That's true.
I mean, it's like,
I was listening to the Breaking Bad Insider.
Uh-huh.
Fuck, the Better Call Saul Insider podcast. And there's some new light. Some new shit has come to light, man.
Really?
On that particular bottle, yeah.
Huh.
They talked about how they had, like, this bottle itself, not the stopper. The stopper's custom made, and may have been inspired by the Perfection Cognac that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. But the bottle itself is something called a Jenny Lind flask, and it's pretty common. It's not super expensive or anything. But they had an artist go in and custom title it with Zafiro Añejo on the front. They blew an entirely new bottle, which is kind of cool.
To this day, like, if you search for Zafiro Añejo, the Bald Move link is the first one you find.
Yeah, that's funny.
And it's also the official Breaking Bad Wikia completely bites that information and not attributed to us.
Yeah,
hurts just a little bit. Just a little bit. Stings.
What are you going to do?
Stings like Zafiro Añejo going down.
No, Zafiro's smooth.
You don't think it's got any fire to it? Look at
that
stopper.
It's a $50 shot tequila.
There's glass flame blowing out of that thing.
It is. I'm going to have to update that article.
Actually, it's probably more like the aguave. Isn't that supposed to represent the aguave plant?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or the cat, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
So I had there's a hot take from Devin H. He said,
Is this the Devynn?
You've got him.
Okay.
You've got it.
I know
He's
Devin
the
now.
Divine Devin. He talks about the fact that we talked about, there's a lot of people talking about stuff here.
Oh, God.
That Vince Gilligan talked about.
Oh, no.
That there's a cameo from a season one Breaking Bad character.
In this episode or in this season?
And he said in the season.
Okay.
And he wonders, could Ken be the Breaking Bad guest star that Gilligan was teasing?
Absolutely, he could.
Would you think that that's playing fair with the audience?
He's a surprisingly minor character to talk about a cameo.
I feel like if you told me up front that they're really talking about Ken Wynn's, I'd have been like, oh, that's bullshit. But now that I've seen it, I feel like I'm not underwhelmed. I'm not overwhelmed. I'm properly whelmed. I'm properly whelmed by a season one guest star.
In a properly whelming episode,
I would have rather seen Crazy Eight,
uh-huh,
or Emilio or whoever, but Ken Wynn's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good enough cameo for me. I'm fine with that. So the next morning, Jimmy wakes up at Kim's house, and there's kind of a funny scene where she won't let him use her toothbrush, and instead he uses her finger.
Sure.
Pretty good when he says,
also,
like,
Jimmy,
wait till
come
you
on.
See what I'm gonna floss with. What?
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure I know what that means, but it's funny.
But you can't use another person's toothbrush. I don't care what kind of bodily fluids you've. She's right. That gets a bullet. That gets underneath your gum.
It's too much. It's too much. There's a difference between kissing and using a person's toothbrush, and that's where I draw the line.
Yeah,
the toothbrush.
Yeah.
I
don't care how intimate with you. I don't want you licking your pinky and stick it in my ear. I don't want any of your fingers up my nose. I don't, you know, there's a couple things are just kind of like, don't, and that's definitely a don't go there.
The other thing
don't use
my
toothbrush.
Is she using a normal amount of toothpaste? Because I use a lot more toothpaste. I cover the brush. She just like puts a dot on it.
I don't know.
Goes to town. Is that like just we got to get the shot, do it, go.
Well, see, I switched to using an electric toothbrush a long time ago, and they have like a tiny, you know, like a between a pea size and dime shaped head. So, like, I guess I use a lot less toothpaste than normal. So maybe she's a electric transitioner. I don't know.
Maybe she just hasn't gotten accustomed to it. Anyway, the cops show up at Price's house. Actually, did you want to talk any more about this? They're kind of reflecting on the previous night, and Kim is ready for work, and they take off.
Yeah, I do like how she shifts into, hey, you got some place to go mode? Like,
yeah, it's like almost like rushing him out a little bit, but she has to be at work.
Well,
so it's
no,
like,
I think it's more of like, I'm not leaving you in my apartment when I, because that's...
I was wondering that too, but I...
That's the tension when you have the one night stands that you kind of gotten into something a bit more. It's like, at what point do you just like, you're free to leave him in your... So I felt like... That, to me, said that they're like, yeah, they had a good time. And there's a lot of textual stuff where she's kind of pumping the brakes on him a little bit. Like, yeah, it would be nice, but there's no way we can do that every night. I'm not going to be slipping Kimmy. But there's also the subtext of, like, I'm not comfortable leaving you behind. Like, you know, if she fully trusted him, she'd be like, hey, I got to leave early. Take your time. See yourself out. Lock the door, and I'll see you later. But she's like, tap, tap, tap. Hey, got some place to go.
You're right.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
So you're definitely right about that. There's something in there that says maybe she doesn't totally trust him. But like the scene before it where they're standing at the mirror and he's like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could do this every night? See, I didn't read her as going like, look, we can't do this every night. It was... I genuinely thought she was like, yeah, that would be fantastic, but she doesn't view it as a possibility, not because she doesn't want to or because like her job precludes it or anything, but like people just can't do that every night. That's not something people do.
I get
Whereas
it.
Jimmy knows, sure it is. I've done it.
And I'm saying it like she's super off-putting, but I'm more like saying that there's a shift throughout the scene where she's realizing that he wants her to come to his side. Well, she wants him to kind of come to her side, and there's not really a middle ground, so she starts to get uncomfortable. And
you're right, and it's nuanced. It's real.
It is.
Really,
it's body language. It's body language. It's the whole, hey, you know, you got some place to go. I thought it was
great. I think that's really good stuff.
I do too. Also, I feel like
they could have had a really stupid conversation, right?
We had like a 5-minute debate about whether they're boyfriend or girlfriend over some quote that Bob O dropped preseason, and I felt like pretty stupid that at the 30-minute mark, oh yeah, they're fucking, yeah, they're totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I call them boyfriend or girlfriend.
I wouldn't, but
it's certainly, it's like that would be in a much shorter debate.
Sure, yeah. Anyway, the cops show up at Price house. It's been totally ransacked, and they talk with him about what was stolen. He goes on and on about this baseball card collection. He loves this collection.
Is this guy too much for you?
No.
Okay.
He's borderline for sure.
I saw a lot of people in the forum saying like, man, they would have appreciated a little pullback on this guy. Cause he's like, a lot of people were talking about him, Jerry Lundgren gardening. The guy, you know, the William H. Macy guy from Fargo.
Okay. Yeah. So the guy's from Minnesota.
That does not shock me.
Yeah. He's actually,
it's the cadence of the dialogue. You know, it's these baseball, we're looking at the wrong end of the microscope. Yeah. It's got that. I mean, he's pulled back on it, but it's still there. The essential Minnesota nature of the dialogue.
Fuck. I can't think of the name of it, but this guy is, he's got a really interesting backstory and in how they found him. Like, Vince Gilligan found this guy after watching a bunch of his videos where he pretends...
Volunteer Ronald McDonald for Ronald McDonald houses, right? No. That's what the color scheme is going for. It's paying homage to...
his background. No, he pretends to be a guy who's, like, world famous at yo-yo tricks. And he calls up...
Yeah,
have you seen this guy?
No, he mentioned that and he linked to some YouTube stuff that I was like, okay, whatever. I didn't find it.
It's apparently really hilarious because he
is it? Shit.
I don't know. I didn't see any of the videos myself. I didn't have time. But he pretends to be a yo-yo master. He calls up these local news stations and wants asked to be on their morning shows.
Oh no!
And so he goes on the morning shows, and then instead of doing his yo-yo tricks, he talks about what a crappy life he has. Just lays it all on them. And then he's like stalling for time, trying not to do the yo-yo trick, because once he does the trick, it's
he'll
the
be
jigs
off.
Up.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
So he I guess did a whole series of these did the morning show tour, and Vince Gilligan found him somewhere. Huh. It's not Flim Flam Yo-Yo Man. If you go listen to the Better Call Saul Insider podcast, you'll hear all about it.
Okay.
And get the name of it. It sounds hysterical.
I also got the link from Sepp, and I'll just link it in the show notes to make it really easy on people.
Okay, cool.
Do we want to talk about the scene in kind of general terms?
Yeah,
are there
we
any
can.
More specifics you want to talk about?
No, not really. There's a little bit, but
you're distracted by something. What do you want to say?
I was getting back to my notes.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. you're distracted by the
this is all great stuff.
The Mac stunning interface. Is Danny here, is he really this stupid, or does he think the cops are this stupid?
That's a good question. I think he's that stupid.
Do you think, what do the cops find in the floorboard storage? Or the
nothing.
Baseboard storage? That's what I thought, too.
I think they found nothing.
But, because they filmed that point of view from the reverse, like I guess you'd call that cubbyhole cam, or mouse cam. They pull that from way far back in the wall.
Yeah.
And I feel like if there was something there that the cops saw, it would be in the foreground.
I think we would have seen it.
But then the scene abruptly ends as they put everything back and swing the couch back into place.
I think they know something's up. They found a place where a stash should be, and they realized that the couch was moved. So I think they know something is up, but they don't know what.
Huh. I'm trying to figure out what is going to happen now.
They might. Yeah. Are they going to bust him?
Are they going to get a search warrant to come back for? I mean, I don't.
Are they going to like try and like follow him?
This guy might be hiding his, you know, primo baseball cards down there or something.
There's
all kinds of legitimate reasons to have a secret compartment in your if I get another house, I want a secret compartment.
I want a secret room. An entire room.
That's what I'm talking
just like,
about. It'd be cool just to have.
Yeah.
You know? That's the kind of nerd I am. I'm
get
one of
the tunnels
secret
in the
weirdos.
Walls and
yeah.
Yeah. That'd be
maybe
cool.
It's soundproof. I don't know. Maybe it's got a drain in the middle of the floor.
Oh Jesus. For, you know, whatever not illegal stuff.
Sure,
I've
always wanted to pee in my own room.
I think they're gonna tail that freaking
really?
Gaudy ass Hummer around the town.
That seems like it could bite Nacho. Well, you're saying Nacho's done with this guy.
That's the thing. Like, how would they trace this back to Nacho? How do they get Nacho from this?
I don't think they can get Nacho from this.
Okay. They can lean on this dude. Maybe they can have him. So there's got to be a way that he's contacting Nacho, yeah?
It was just an odd, yeah.
To set up meets and times and stuff.
I assume he's got a burner phone, then so does Nacho.
Yeah. So maybe they'll
lean
on him.
Or actually, he's probably using his real cell phone because he's a dumbass.
Probably. Maybe they'll get him to try to call Nacho and set up another meeting.
I just...
If Nacho's smart, he's burned that phone, though.
Yeah, I just don't... I'm trying to think. Albuquerque cops, are they going to make this leap to this guy's got a baseball card collection that we need to investigate, and he's got a weird thing, but like, you know, I don't think they're going to tail him. I don't think they're going to get a search warrant. What did they have to have to get a search warrant? It felt
nothing.
Like it's a weird
nothing for a search
it
warrant.
Felt like, you know, the way they faded to black is just a weird place to leave it, and it drives me crazy because I'm trying to figure out where it's going to go, and just not enough information.
Maybe they'll just straight up question him in his living room.
If they come back next week and they're still in his living room, I'm calling all kinds of bullshit. That's not how time works.
They play fast and loose with time here.
They cannot still be interviewing.
Linear.
It's got to be. That's the end of this scene, and I'm trying to think. Because the cops, you're right, clearly know something's up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I don't think they're suspecting he's a major drug dealer. I think they're just...
I think if they put any pressure on him at all, he's going to fold.
Okay.
This guy's not willing to stand up.
Okay. And then there's also the possibility that there's something back there that we didn't see.
Right.
Which I would feel a little gypped by, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't feel like there was. Did you know that the white cop in this house is the guy who goes and responds to the call that Skyler makes in Breaking Bad?
I did recognize. To get Walt evicted? I did recognize him. Yeah. I thought they both were we've seen previous to Breaking Bad. But...
Well, I know we've seen the white guy. Okay. I didn't recognize the black guy, but who knows? Maybe he's in there somewhere. So Jimmy's floating in the pool again, and he calls Kim to tell her that he's found the perfect mark,
mm-hmm.
and he invites her out to the pool. As he's floating there, he decides to call up Davis & Main, which is a law firm that he turned the job down.
Yep.
Why do you think he has this sudden change of heart here and decides to go get a job?
He just realizes that he's about to get in another rut. Now, as I was watching this as so-called Thurston Howell, I wasn't seeing Thurston Howell. I was seeing, like, mob boss and witness protection or something. This guy looks...
You know what you're actually seeing?
A little dangerous to me. What?
You're actually seeing Sean Connery in a James Bond movie. This is, like, this outfit that this fucker is wearing is apparently a recreation of an outfit that James Bond wore in one of the movies.
Yeah.
Really
Sean Connery
was
frequently sporting... Well, I mean, it looked good on him, but... But Sean Connery's frequently sporting those weird board shorts. No, not board shorts. They're just...
It's a onesie. They call it a onesie bathing suit.
Yeah. I've seen every James Bond, and I don't remember Sean Connery looking like a fool in any of them.
Yeah, but...
I mean, this is a beach ball poured into that, and he's got, you know, weird-shaped feet.
Did he?
He does. His feet are like arched, like someone folded him in half and then shoved him in these things.
Ugh.
But no, when I saw this guy, he looked like I didn't see Easy Mark, and I thought where they're going is that he was going to try to scam this guy, and it turns out that this is a guy you don't fuck with.
Yeah, I'm going surprised after super, we won't see another scam.
Like I feel like the scam people, you have to go with people that, you know, there's two, you know, you can always just go after old people. And just take money they don't have, and that's like the truly awful kind of scams,
right.
Or like weak and vulnerable people. Or you take people that have, you know, they're solid middle class but trying to get a leg up, and you take advantage of their naivete. Like going after really rich people, like that seems like it's a dangerous game because they're the type of people that could fuck with you back.
Right.
And like this guy seemed like, you know, somebody that Batman would be punching in the face and... You know, because he's gotten to a judge in Gotham. He seemed dangerous to me. This,
might,
he neither
might
here nor there, but
yeah, I'm not sure if we'll see this guy again. I don't know.
Can't imagine.
It seems like in this scene, Jimmy realizes that he's not going to be able to have a life with Kim if he goes off and does his Saul thing, his Slippin' Jimmy thing.
Yeah.
Plus,
he just seemed bored. He seems like the kid who. You know, called
well,
him
he doesn't
sick.
Have a sidekick, which is a problem because, you know, he really enjoyed it when Marco was doing it with him and they could, you know, rejoice in their victories afterward and have a good time. But
no, he seems like the kid who played hooky from school and it's like 10:30 and the cartoons just shut off. He's like, oh, shit.
Oh,
now I got 4 hours of soap operas and there's none of my friends home. And like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
What am I going to do?
I thought you were going to say like. Ferris Bueller if he didn't have anybody to go out with.
Sure, yeah.
Like, I think he might make some action, but it would be a lot less fun.
That's a real problem with kids nowadays is there is no end to, like, cartoons don't ever shut off. And, like, there's always the video games. Like, that was a real...
There's always YouTube.
That was a real pressure. It's like, how bad do you really want to stay home from school? Because, it feels great when you're in your jammies eating cereal and then around 10:30, okay, I can watch Price is Right, but then after that, you're fucked.
Really nothing.
You're fucked. It's the young and the restless.
I would do the video games. I'd go to the NES.
See, you're too young. You don't remember the time before Atari. All too clear for me.
Yeah, what the hell do you do?
You don't
do
shit.
Parents go to work.
Go play Legos.
Yeah.
So then you stare at your walls until the you hear the bus coming through the neighborhood. It's like, finally, people.
Yeah. There are a couple of, I would call them mournful moments before, you know, he goes to this Davis and Maine meeting, both times,
mm-hmm.
both the first meeting where he turns down the job and this meeting where he accepts it. You can tell that this is really not who he wants to be, and he's kind of making a sacrifice here in order to, I guess, in his mind, be with Kim. I mean, that's got to be it. He calls Kim on the phone. He's unable to get a hold of her because she has a real job and a real life going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like that's his thing.
Yeah, I mean, clearly I honestly don't know, because this episode I felt was properly all over the map with his motivations and stuff, because there's something with Cicero, there's something with Kim, there's something, he's still got to have something about, like, this, like, fuck my brother is a reflexive thing. It's not, you know, something that can, I guess it could sustain you if you just really hate your brother.
And depending on their interactions in the future.
Yeah, so I feel like that's, I don't have a lot of great analysis on exactly why he's making a decision here. Part of it's boredom and not like, I've done this and I know where this goes. And
yeah, and part of it is that I don't have anybody to do this with. It's not as much fun.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on. Saul meets the staff and gets his new office at Davis and Maine. They run down his list of perks, which are pretty outstanding.
Yeah.
I'd say. He gets a company car and his choice of artwork and... apparently his choice of desk, because he orders a custom desk, says they'll see what they can do. And then he notices a switch on the wall that says, don't turn this off. And he does, and it doesn't appear to do anything. I had a lot of questions about this switch.
Another very Kafka-esque scene.
Right. Orders that are to be followed for no apparent reason.
Yep.
And
then you switch a kind of brace, because I was thinking, like, you'd hear people... in the lobby, like, well, oh, just like, God, what happened to the Wi-Fi? I didn't know if it was going to be catastrophic.
Yeah. What do you think happens when he flips the switch?
I don't know.
I think we're encouraged to speculate.
I don't know. I honestly, because I, you know, my old house, do you remember how many switches that didn't do anything?
Yeah, there were a few.
Because it had been a victim of a dumbass do-it-yourself guy who was pulling, he was too lazy to run his own lines, and he's just pulling lines from other things to do. And I've been in places where I've worked where there was switches like that, but they usually had mechanical, like, it wasn't just taped over, don't turn off, or unless it was like a light thing.
Yeah, usually they're hooked to auto-sensing lights, right?
Yeah.
Like, auto-on-off lights.
You can make a... you can buy those things where you actually screw into the outlet switch that prevents it from being, if you're really serious about it, being
right.
not turned
it's
off.
Strange that they cheaped out on that at this law firm.
Yeah, yeah. But at the end, it's like, maybe it's just super low stakes. I don't know. Like, what? I have no idea.
I like to think that it opens the trash room door at the mall.
All the way in Omaha?
Yeah.
It would be funny if it actually does do something very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, like, it unlocks a door somewhere else in the building or shuts off the external lights to light up the sign, or I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's actually, like, supposed to have a big, like, what does it do?
Yeah.
Even though obviously people are going to speculate about that.
Yeah.
I was listening to, like I said, the Better Call Saul Insider cast, and the writer, I think it was Peter Gould, I think he was talking about this. He said that this basically, when you bookend the episode with this and the refusal of Gene to open that door at the beginning, it's to show how different these two people are, how much he has changed. Because Jimmy will flip the switch, consequences be damned, I'm going to see what it does.
Yeah.
Have fun. Whereas Gene won't do it.
We had a piece of feedback from Michael G that said a lot of the same stuff. He says, in the beginning, Gene, locked in both a metaphorical and literal prison, cannot bring himself to open emergency exit and trip the alarm. He knows there's potential consequences and is terrified. Contrast that to the end of the episode, to see Jimmy in his new office, whose confidence is soaring, knowingly flipping a switch despite clear warnings not to do so.
Yeah.
Which demonstrates how far Saul or Gene has fallen.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the other things. Like, Gene, he has a fear of the known and barely has the confidence to scratch his real name in fine print on the wall. But on the other, he has no fear of the unknown and demands Coco Bolo.
Yep.
So I think that's a pretty good analysis of it.
Absolutely.
Did you look at any prices of Coco Bolo stuff? Because that's like...
I read about Coco Bolo.
It's like a dark, oily, fragrant rainforest tree that only grows in Central America and is like endangered. Like
How expensive is it? I didn't look the price.
Someone in forum got some desk prices and they're like 16 grand.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
So...
I mean, I guess that's nothing when you have multiple cars at your disposal and someone to drive them to you.
Sure.
16 grand is not a big deal.
I mean, some companies just make... they operate on levels that you don't... really, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when Saul's in the first season, when Jimmy's like, yeah, I charge $450 an hour, kind of pulling a price out of his ass, I feel like that's kind of low for a HHM sort of lawyer, you know?
Yeah.
But I remember, like, they probably make a lot more.
I knew someone that worked for an office furniture company, Steelcase.
Okay.
And they had private planes, plural. And this wasn't like Steelcase, the Nat. This was like a regional outlet where they would fly their design and sales teams to customer clients and stuff.
Wow.
They had one like Saudi prince that got steel gold plated cubicle shit. Because that's what Steelcase is. It's cubicle grade.
Right.
But it was for some hotel project they're doing. And it was, you know, like anytime there's that kind of crazy fucking profit margins, who knows what's going on.
B2B. We got to get in the business-to-business podcasting game.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
That's where the real money's at. No, I did look up a little bit the details about Coco Bolo. Like you said, it's a very oily wood. I thought this was, like, perfect for Jimmy, right?
I thought there was a little oily, sleazy sort of feel. Extent that even if you've, like, sealed it and whatnot, it can still, like, stain your hands when you're working with it.
Right. Prolonged exposure will change you. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of metaphorical stuff with that.
Totally. And it's actually, like, apparently when you're working with the stuff, when you're cutting it, you have to wear respirators because it can cause allergic reactions if you inhale it. Like,
sure.
There's a lot of just seedy stuff about this Coco Bolo wood that matches up with Saul's character.
I also thought there was something, too, that, like, it is on a couple of endangered species schedules, that there's a little bit of an illicit thing, too.
Like,
of course, Jimmy.
Like, you shouldn't have this thing.
Yeah. This is the forbidden fruit.
Mm.
Lots of different layers there.
Yeah.
Like a Cinnabon. Cinnabon.
All right. Well, that's all I got for the episode.
What'd you think? No. The art on the wall.
Did the
Villa Gang say anything about the art on the wall? Because what immediately stuck out in my mind is it looks like a Jesse outfit.
A Jesse outfit?
Yeah, it had the hoodie with the tight jeans and the sneakers, but it looks like the atomic symbols are exploding out of them. Like,
so what immediately stuck out in my head is Pothead.
Yep, there was a little bit of that
imagery.
Where
the guy's head should be.
Yep, sure.
Which I guess does tie in more with the Jesse thing. Sure. And, you know, just with the general drug theme of Breaking Bad. I had not heard the Jesse thing. I had heard someone say it looks kind of like Walt's outfit at the beginning, where the pants are flying up at the screen and looks like someone's in
them. Sure, yep.
So maybe there's a little bit of that.
Vince and Peter.
They didn't say anything about it, really. Not that I recall. No.
Okay. Well, if it had some deeper significance, but they drew attention to it too. Like, do you like the art? If not.
Well, like I said, a lot of that podcast, they ran long and it was taken up by talking about acting.
Ah.
So I think maybe they just didn't get to a lot of stuff.
Yep.
That might have been one of the things. So that's it.
We have some feedback.
Yeah.
You can send feedback into bettercastsaul@baldmove.com. Or you can get on our forums, where we always have a episode thread that we can chew the metaphorical fat over at forums.baldmove.com. Mike K. said, last year, I remember you guys giving this show a 3-season maximum after watching the first 2 episodes, though I couldn't find any hard evidence. Well, then we're exonerated. We're off the hook.
Yeah, we don't deal. We don't trade in hard evidence.
We only Siths deal in absolutes. Wondering if you want to reevaluate your predictions on the length of the run after a full season of Jimmy.
Yeah, it's a little bit longer, and they talked about this a little bit on the Insider Cast.
I don't know. I mean, to me, it does still feel like a 3-season run. You know, with them walking back from the Saul side, this maybe that could extend it. But, you know, there's also kind of a clock on this. Even as interesting as Breaking Bad was, it had a 5-season clock to where that premise... Yeah. Now, that had a time limit because the guy had cancer, but they also kind of got away with that. Like, you know,
remission,
he should have been in remission. Sure. And I feel like that Vince, that experience, his experience with X-Files, his experience with Breaking Bad, and shows him the value of going out when you still got gas in the tank.
Yeah.
And not breaking down, running on fumes. And I feel like his partner there, Peter Gould, is of the same mind. So I would not think this has as much legs as Breaking Bad.
Okay.
So four seasons might to start stretching. But then again, these are this is another 10-episode season, so there's not as much material in each one. You got to consider that as well.
Right.
Like four 10-episodes runs is about the same as a 5 13-episode run for Breaking Bad. Of course, Breaking Bad also had the super short first season.
That's true. Yeah.
So I'm arguing out both sides of my mouth.
Well, I feel like it's interesting because they talk a bit about this in the Insider cast. Some numbers are thrown out, like some hypothetical numbers, right? Like we pulled back on this Saul thing because we realized, oh, if we get, you know, 3 or 4 seasons in, we don't want it to be all Saul all the time from the early days. And then they also throw a number, you know, if we get 4 or 5 seasons in. So I feel like they have an idea that they want to be somewhere in that range, but not a firm idea yet.
So if I think about what I said in the preview cast, and if I'm just speaking as a fan, obviously as a podcaster, this is a really successful show for us. I would like for it to run as long as it can.
And also, I just love this universe. One of my favorite.
Because it's also the affection to Breaking Bad, and you wonder, like, you know, when are we eventually, because I feel like we'll eventually see Walt, if it's just a cameo.
Yeah.
But I would like to see however they get to Saul, and then I'd like to see the next season be post-Saul, and then that's it.
Okay.
And or maybe not even, like, you if they take the final season and split it in half like they did with the final season of Breaking Bad, 8 episodes leading up to the fall into Saulville, and then the back half, the remaining 4 8 episodes are going to be the, you know, epilogue for what happens. Because something, again, I feel like I will be left unsatisfied if I don't see some closure with what's going on to Gene in Nebraska. Do you feel me on that? So
kind of, yeah.
Maybe they could go 3.5 seasons to the fall of Jimmy and then do a half on, or maybe they do 3 full seasons and then a full season on the post-Saul career of Gene. Or I don't know.
It feels like 4 might be the right number now that they've kind of pumped the brakes a little bit on turning Jimmy into Saul.
But I do want to see substantial. Maybe they can do that with just a couple black and white teaser segments. They can give me some closure on that. But I do feel like I need some closure on that.
I mean, do you want Saul to die? Is that what you want? Do you want Gene to die?
No, honestly, I kind of like him redeem himself.
Okay.
I don't need him to die. Maybe he looks up Jesse, which sets up a third spinoff series.
Jesse and the continuing adventures of Jesse and
the
Saul.
Pink man and the good man. I feel like I got to do Gene. I don't need him to die. I don't need him to die, but I need him to be more than just a person that's slowly rotting.
Okay,
you know, and completely going fallow. He's got a lot of potential, and that's not being fully exploited in that Cinnabon joint.
I agree, but I'm not sure that I don't find that somehow satisfying.
Sure.
In a twisted way.
It's satisfying
way.
A different way.
Absolutely different, yeah.
It's more morally and ethically satisfying than...
Right.
And I guess it's becoming less satisfying the more I get to know Jimmy.
And what a...
And I feel like what's interesting is Vince and Peter Gould are also feeling that too.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit, we like Jimmy. We need to know more about Jimmy and make it even more tragic and you know Shakespearean with this fall. Like they're finding the weird kind of tragedy that you wouldn't think that Jimmy going to Saul would be as good as Mr. White falling into Heisenberg.
Uh-huh.
But they're getting there.
One other thing I want to say about that Insider cast, I don't want to actually talk about this. I just want to say they have a really fantastic short, but fantastic discussion about why Peter Gould, when he's writing this scene where Jimmy, they kind of change the perspective on Jimmy at the very beginning, and his meeting with Davis and Maine, why that's not a cheap trick, and the difference I see, like. Personally, I see between what they did here and what they've done on shows like The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
the discussion is fantastic. I would say go listen to Breaking Bad Insider. Better Call Saul Insider just for that alone.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard that discussion. I'm interested in it. My opening statement would be, you can get away with anything as long as the audience is willing to go along with it. Like, it's whether...
And they talk about why the audience might be willing to go along with this.
I think because they're interested in seeing more Jimmy as much as the creators are.
Yeah, that's part of it.
And
certainly.
I feel like whereas everyone thought, "Oh, we want to get right to Saul and see Saul doing." I think Saul would be hard to. That was my whole thing about this Better Call Saul is he is good in moderation, but he is not a great standalone character. Whereas Jimmy, plays beautifully.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like the same type of show, like this very plot and character driven thing. If Better Call Saul is just Saul being Saul.
Yeah.
That would just feel like a Saul of the Week show.
Let's move on to the next piece of feedback. Michael McBride from Virginia says, I liked the episode quite a bit, from the black and white Omaha to the full color drink con. I can imagine most Breaking Bad fans caught on to the callbacks, or as I like to call them, call forwards, and I'm starting to realize that Ken, the stockbroker, must be shitted on constantly. Just be glad Gus didn't buy that bottle of tequila, Jimmy. Ken the stockbroker, is he? I mean, he's like a punching bag.
Uh-huh.
Because the way he does never says like, "Ah, oh, I'm having a bad day." Sometimes Ken gets out of the morning and Ken wonders if Ken's doing the right thing. It's always, "I'm crushing it. I'm killing it. I'm winning." Yeah. So.
That's who he is in his own mind. He's got to keep it up, you know?
Sure. And, like, he's out, what, $2,000?
Yeah, probably.
You know, he probably blows that in Vegas a couple times a year or more. And, like, you know, he's out of BMW, but I'm pretty sure he had insurance on that thing.
So. Of course he
did. It's kind of like one of those victimless crimes.
Almost,
that everyone talks about.
I don't know. If someone blew up my car, I might not feel like it was so victimless.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't know. When Ken tells that story, does he say some asshole took a wet, service station squeegee job and disabled it and blew it up? Or does he say, hell of a thing happened to me when I was at this gas station. I was sitting there and then the thing just caught fire and blew up. I guess I was just too hot that day. I mean, so it's like, does he even know he's being victimized? I mean, he's going to know this time when he goes to try to put that paperwork through and, you know, he runs the identity and error 404 not found. Anyway, moving on to the episode themes, Michael McBee, rather.
Oh, my God.
Michael B. Ryan. I fucking outed somebody. How do I feel about that? Man.
Got his real name out of his glove box.
It's a real Ken Wynn
situation. We're coming for your baseball cards, Michael McBee.
You better have your baseboards clean. Moving on to episode themes and plot, I can't help but say I think this is a slight step back for the series, feeling like Villigan and Gould realized they maybe went a little too close to full-on Saul. Hey, I might be judging. It's way too early. No need to talk me off the edge, though. I'm a ride or die for the show. That seems like it's just that's not even subtext. That's text at this point. They've been very open about we are walking him back
crisis
to Jimmy Land. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a smart move.
Devin had a couple more things to say about this crossover characters. Because when it comes to crossover characters from Breaking Bad, I think there's three tiers of them. First off, there's characters that have direct connections to Jimmy and make logical sense to have in a Better Call Saul storyline, such as Mike, Huell, Patrick, maybe even Gus. Then there's neutral, low-profile characters that don't break suspension of disbelief, such as Ken and the cops, etc. And lastly, there's the main cast of Breaking Bad that probably shouldn't be in the show at all unless it directly ties into the Breaking Bad days of Jimmy's life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't want to... Like, there was a lot of speculation about, oh, maybe Walt will walk out of the store next to Saul's hair salon. No, sure. I don't want that.
If they just cross each other and like Jim and Saul and Jimmy doesn't mug for the camera and like, oh, look at that guy. I mean, that would bother you?
It won't. I don't know. It won't be like a deal breaker, like, oh, fuck this show or anything like, but it just feels a little too cute.
What if Kim and Jimmy go to the Frosty Dog and they're there at night and the doghouse rather and they're having a chili dog and in the background you see Jesse, Badger, and Combo and Skinny Pete roll up and just order, and they're like jackassing around in the back. They're never mentioned.
See, that's weird because I think that could happen. Totally, totally. And I think if it was like Skinny Pete and Badger roll
up. No Jesse?
And no Jesse, I'd be okay with it. But you throw Jesse in the mix, I'm starting to roll my eyes.
But why?
I can't explain that. I can't articulate why that would bother me more.
I don't think it would.
Because it's the same thing.
And I'm even thinking, like, maybe if Jimmy actually says, man, look at those jackasses, or I that wouldn't even bother me.
You know, I bet they would pull it off in a way that I would be totally okay with.
That's, I guess,
these guys
are
so good at it.
Yeah.
The people involved in this show are just terrific, so.
I mean, you start getting, I'm trying to think of who I'd be just morally offended. Like, Walt Jr. had some interactions with Saul. Hank would be kind of cool. Marie, like, what if Marie X-rays one of Saul's, Jimmy's clients has got whiplash or something?
Gus, I think Gus is the one, right? Because given what we know about Gus and Saul's relationship, which
see, I don't think that think would actually offend me because I don't think Gus had met him, but I would accept him ordering chicken from Gus.
Okay.
Because that,
no knowledge.
He has no idea that that's actually the, shadowy contact that Mike works for.
Right.
Anyway, got to skip that because we already read it. Barry C. said, as enjoyable episode as always, but what did it achieve? I'm not sure it set anything up of major interest that wasn't set up already. We knew Jimmy was on the fence about getting his lawyer on or being a grifter. We knew him and Kim were on again, off again. We knew the IT guy Mike was working for was a tool. What, for you, did this episode set up as potential questions and plot points? The only thing that really piqued my interest was the cold open and what we might get from present-day Saul story. So what do you think of this criticism of this episode being kind of a treadmill that you didn't really get anywhere?
That was the point of this episode, and that's why I don't like it a ton. I think it was good and it was entertaining, but I don't think it
was... blow your doors off.
Yeah, didn't blow anything. I mean, that's the point, right? So they set up a couple of things.
Yeah.
They reversed on Jimmy's decision not to take this job, which I think is important plot-wise.
Mm-hmm.
They also made very damn clear the relationship that Kim and Jimmy have.
Yep. Well, they made it clear the relationship, but the nature of it and
And it's a muddy thing. It's not 100% solid in any direction, but that's very clear now.
Yeah, yeah.
And before it was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Now I don't feel that.
Yeah.
So that was important. I don't think it did much plot-wise, other than I think now with the price stuff,
that's the thing
that could lead somewhere.
That's the stealth action.
Yeah,
like that means something. They spent 10 plus minutes on this of the plot on this, and there is a kind of a cliffhanger to that. That is got to go somewhere, and I believe it will go somewhere.
Probably somewhere big.
Yeah. Doug L. has got a lot of legal analysis, more than I would have thought given the episode.
Yeah.
Actually, before I get to there, I've got one other that I accidentally pasted in the middle of Doug's feedback somehow.
Okay.
That would have been weird. George S. says, is me or is watching Better Call Saul strangely rewarding? With the show being gone for so long, I forgot how great it was for a second. I truly feel like I'm working out parts of my brain that I normally turn off, and as such, I find the show not only demands my full attention, but I'm always ready to give it to them. With no big production flaws, mischaracter beats, or random plots, it's given attentive viewers a lot more time to just sit back and immerse yourself in the universe. Great job to all around.
Here's one of the things I think it does super well. I agree with him. We have gotten 150 weeks now of Walking Dead constantly moralizing over the same fucking concepts and ideas. In this show, they don't do that. The conversations are rough. The conversations are the way that people speak. They can't fully articulate the ideas that are in their head so that someone else will understand them. Instead, they have to go show them.
Yeah.
Or maybe even the person doesn't quite get them. But we as an audience kind of understand that and feel like this is a real conversation between real people working out real shit. And I feel like that's the thing that draws me in so much is how those characters are developed through those conversations and those actions that aren't quite fully formed even in their own heads.
Yeah, and I have the problem in reverse. I watch so much good television that I think it's warping me. Like, I feel like I might be a bit unfair to shows like X-Files or The Walking Dead or even Fargo. Like, I rant and rave about something happens late season two of Fargo that I'm not going to spoil for anybody. If I wasn't watching The Leftovers, or if like Fargo was the only show of its caliber that I really watched because I was a Coen Brothers fan, I just think I would be barking at the moon about how great it is, and I that thing wouldn't have fazed me at all. So it's like I'm the guy who started drinking $2 Chuck, and now I'm cracking $100 bottles, and I'm gonna get a bottle of now $4 Chuck for fun, and like, oh, what the fuck is this swill?
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I feel like my tastes are slowly, not even slowly, like rapidly approaching to where, you know, some people ask me if I've seen this or seen that, or if it's really, and that's like, my question is, okay, it's good, but how good is it? Like, everybody's talking about this 11, 23, 62, or whatever it is. It's got J.J. Abrams. It's got Stephen King's name behind it. And I've heard from the professional scene that it's good, but not great. And my first response is, well, then why do I want to waste time with it?
Understandable, because there's a lot of TV to watch.
But a lot of the television that I've really held dear to my heart over the years, the MacGyvers, the Star Treks, the...
Sure.
Earth Final Conflicts, that's the definition of good but not great.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least a lot of it, you know. If I went back to watch the first two seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation with my current brain and eyes, I'd be like, I'd be out. I'd be out like after three episodes.
Of course.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
It is.
And there's just so much. Like, there's too much shit. There's too much shit to watch.
It's real funny when I think back to our comments about, you know, we're in the golden age of TV right now, but how long can it really last? How much good TV can they actually make? Well, you know what? TV keeps getting better and better. And
I mean, our problem is that
I don't see any slowing.
I mean, it was like a year ago that you could probably watch it all, but you probably couldn't give the depth of coverage we get. Now, I don't think you can watch it all. And it's accelerating, and I'm worried that like it's going to continue to fragment to the point where you've got... This group of excellent television shows that not everyone can watch, and people are going to be passionate about it, and it's like the award shows are going to become a mess because what the hell do you do?
Yeah,
when you have 10,000 hours of awesome TV a year, what are you going to do?
I think that's the nature of everything right now, is it's becoming more niche, more fragmented. I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. Yes,
no.
It's going to be harder to connect, but the ways that we connect with people are becoming more and more broad, you know, like the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, you can go out and find a group for literally anything you want. Not a problem.
Sure. Doug L., he's got some legal advice for us, which, again, I'm surprised because when I first saw his email, I'm like, what? Is there a lot of legal stuff to talk about? But it was all interesting, so... Let's talk about fraud a bit. He says a good chunk of the episode focuses on Kim and Jimmy taking the unsuspecting financier for a ride to snag some ill-gotten tequila. But is this actually fraud? We all generally understand a fraud to be intentionally misrepresenting or hiding the truth to trick a person into giving you something, but the law is understandably more precise. Like, right now, did Jimmy and Kimmy, did they defraud Ken? What would you think?
I say... Yes.
Okay.
Because they signed legal documents with false names and had him buy them drinks.
Yeah, I feel like the signature is where it went from bullshitting the fraud. But we'll see. We'll see what the analysis is. Fraud is the same basic elements everywhere in the country. One, Jimmy represents to business guy that a fact is true. Two, that representation is false. Three, he knew that the representation was false when he made it. Or he made the representation recklessly and without regard for its truth. Four, Jimmy intended the business guy rely on the representation. Five, the business guy reasonably relied on Jimmy's representation. Six, the business guy was harmed. And seven, business guy's reliance on Jimmy's representation was a substantial factor in causing his harm. Whether Jimmy actually defrauded the guy turns on two key parts of this, what Jimmy actually represented and whether business guy was reasonable in relying on Jimmy. We know that Jimmy lied about who he was and having the money to invest, but that's not necessarily fraud here. I agree. Business people often try to drum up business by taking people out to lunch or offering other perks in order to entice them to give them business. This does not make the recipient a fraud if he or she accepts the perks, but ultimately decides not to do business with them. Moreover, we do not know what was on the paper Jimmy signed. If it was actually a promise to invest, then there may be fraud here. Second, there's a real question about business guy's reasonable reliance. I admit I do not know the law in New Mexico, but I imagine he may be required to do some due diligence first, which he obviously did not do there.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Like, as a professional investor, do you have to do some kind of due diligence to see if the guy's got, because that's the other thing. It's like you're trying to fill out a mortgage and you misstate your income by $5,000 a year. Is that fraud? Did you just mistaken? Did you forget to account for taxes?
Sure.
You know, did you declare every credit card as dead or did you miss one?
Yeah, that's where that intent to deceive comes
in. They pull up your credit report and it's a bunch of bullshit. They don't throw you in jail. They just decline to do business with you.
Right.
So that's interesting. B, illegal searches. Did the cops illegally search Price's baseboard without a warrant? What would you say as a layman? I'd say no.
Yeah. He invites him in the house.
He invites him in the house. Now, it's not, it's not in plain view.
Yeah. But probable cause is within plain view.
But he invited him to kind of like, you know, have a look around in the interest of investigating the crime that was committed.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like, I don't know.
I don't think
pulling up baseboards might be inadmissible.
I don't know. I don't feel like they did anything ethically wrong there. Now, whether or not it's admissible
legally,
in court,
yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
But.
So he says this could go a lot of ways. If I were a prosecutor, I'd argue that the police were already in the house searching for evidence of a crime by the invitation of the owner.
Yeah.
Sure. They would have reason to believe that there is potential evidence behind the baseboard given the pattern of debris suggested that the burglars had moved the couch, which we didn't touch on, but I thought it was fairly obvious.
It was, yeah.
If I were a criminal defense attorney, I would argue that they decided to search the baseboard. When they decided to search the baseboard, they weren't investigating the burglars. They were investigating Price himself. They could have easily detained him to prevent him accessing the area while they obtained a warrant to search the baseboard. My suspicion is that Price will ultimately retain Jimmy, and that is precisely the argument he will make to get out of whatever evidence was seized, thrown out. Although, it's not clear to me that the evidence was seized.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But this is a good point. Like, it seems like if Price got in legal trouble, he might call Mike, who might call Jimmy, which would close the circle around.
Yeah, seems like it could.
You also had a point on law firm excesses.
But then...
Oh, sorry.
That's tough because he's got to defend this guy, right? Now he's back in the same boat he was in season one where Nacho calls him up and says, you got to get me off.
Why does he have to defend Price?
Because if...
Because if it leads back to Nacho, right now,
yeah, but if it leads back to Nacho and he's the lawyer on the case, Nacho's not going to be happy.
Well, so is Nacho, you're saying Nacho's going to call to have him represented?
No.
Or he's going to represent Price.
Price and find out that he's dealing with Nacho and go, oh God, now I'm in over my head.
Okay, fine.
I have to make this case work out.
Why would Jimmy take the case?
I think he takes it before he realizes that.
But why would he do it? He's got a job up in
Santa Fe.
Why wouldn't Mike?
Yeah. That's a good question. It might be tougher than we thought to get them together.
On the topic of a law firm excesses, finally I want to address the scene at the end of the show. Jimmy's being offered a lavishly oversized office with crazy perks, including company cars and Chocobolo. That's the new cereal. Better Call Saul cereal. Should be Chocobolo, and it's just chocolate-flavored desk made out of grains of rice.
$1,600 a box.
And pinky rings. What would be the Better Call Saul cereal? You'd have a earpiece Bluetooth cell phone. You'd have the Chocobolo desk. That's the marshmallow pieces that give it the name. Or it's the marshmallow, vanilla marshmallow. Everything else is chocolate.
You'd have a real shitty car.
Mm-hmm. Well, or do you go with the Caddy?
I don't know. Right now you go with the car, the whatever, Geo or whatever.
I think you
it
go
is.
With Huel's head because you know how like the shapes are all like the star lucky stars and
statues
moons,
of
they're
liberty.
They're always kind of like deformed and that would work well with his weird head shape.
Right.
Yeah. The inflatable deformers. Statue of Liberty.
Gotta have that in there.
Gotta have that. Maybe some columns represent his constitution office. All right, I think we got it nailed.
Okay.
Anyway, this Chocobolo desk that apparently costs over $10,000. I can't say that law firms don't provide this kind of treatment, but I've never seen it, and I don't know any attorneys who have. This is even more unusual.
Even for their partners? Like, I get the impression that he got a partner offer there, yeah?
Well, I don't know about that, but I also
don't know. Well, I mean, the case they made, he was like, I bring this case to you, any other law firm, I'm an instant partner. You beg me to be partner. Like,
yeah.
They really hit that hard, the partner thing at HHM.
I mean, I certainly, like, I... So I used to do technical consulting for an Indianapolis Bar Association, And I were, it was in some pretty swanky, like a couple, I was in one office that was the, a penthouse suite kind of office that I had the whole top floor.
Yeah, you go to like Baker and Daniels downtown. Holy fuck.
But even that, like I, it was nice and swanky, but it wasn't, I don't think it was $16,000 desk nice. But then
maybe
some of the stuff you see on like L.A. Law, which I guess is, you know, I get as a television show, and some of the stuff like I'm watching with the O.J. Simpson and oh god, who is the Shapiro?
Yeah,
I feel like that guy might have that guy. Like that's more of a corporate lawyer, a, like a really high profile defense lawyer, like where he uses his wealth to like look how successful I am.
Exactly. I think if you go to like certain areas, like if you go to LA, I bet a lot of like acting law, whatever.
Sure.
Those lawyers probably have this type of shit. If you go to DC, I bet a lot of lawyers probably have this
lawyers
type
that work
of stuff.
With agents, you know, that probably have that because they're trying to attract that kind of clientele.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is even more unusual here because Jimmy would be coming in as an associate, not as a partner, and a fairly inexperienced one at that.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't. The partnership is like
they
that's a permanent thing.
I know,
you
but
can't
they
get
made
rid of
such
a,
huge deal about it in season one. I don't know. I understand why you would say that, but
so he says on a personal note, I spent over 6 years working for a firm that primarily defended auto manufacturers, all the way from Kias and Fords and Hondas to the low end to Ferraris, Maseratis, and Aston Martins on the high end. Even with car companies as our primary clients, nobody was receiving free stuff, let alone vehicles. The partners mostly drove Priuses that they paid for themselves. So what does that mean for the show? It means that Jimmy is likely being wooed because his Sandpiper case is a great cash cow and they want to keep him around. But what happens when the case is over? He'll be expected to produce, and I don't know if he has the ability to land another golden goose like this. I agree with this analysis because also, like, if the Sandpiper is a whale, I feel like the type of firms that are representing, like, class action lawsuits with old folks, they're still not going to be this nice.
Yeah,
like, this place looked like a Southwestern high-end hotel, which I'm pretty sure that's what the set was. Like, that reception area looked very hotel lobby.
Yeah.
That they dressed up to be a reception desk and all that. Yeah. But, you know, it's a TV show.
Sure.
You can't really dissolve a body in acid in like 30 minutes either. But I saw that done multiple times in Breaking Bad.
I imagine we'll get more information
about
his role
there. You can't blow up a mid-sized you know, building, top floor of a building with fulminated mercury. But I saw that happen too.
Yeah. And live through an explosion that big.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for that legal analysis, Doug. If you are one of those swanky working for Saudi prince type of law firms,
and you
want to
do
OJ
some pro
Simpson,
bono work,
you want to do some pro bolo, you want to do some pro bolo bald move work, or if you got some firsthand accounts of like some of the tales of excess in the legal industry, write it in. BetterCastSaul@baldmove.com or on the forums, forums.baldmove.com. We'll talk about it. That's all I got for this week, man.
All right, cool. Well, then we'll be back for 202 next Wednesday. Today's Wednesday, yeah?
It is.
All right, we'll be back then. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.